Do I suffer from HCDS? And what about the non sequitur controversy?
Hello, and welcome to the Prickly City Podcast for February 25th, 2019. I'm Janine Fadich, and here is your host and the creator of Prickly City, Scott Stantis.
Thank you, Janine Fadich, and thank you all for coming back. We've been off for a while. We were on a trip to the Netherlands.
And our podcast for last week got lost again.
We actually did record two back-to-back, and I pushed a button.
Yep.
See, you always tell me not to, and I do, and...
And that's what happens. Things get lost.
So there's a couple of lost episodes floating out there of the Prickly City Podcast, which 20, 30, 40 years from now, it'll be like a major find.
Right. Like the finding, you know, Louisa May Alcott novel in an attic or something. Just like.
Anyway, so thank you for being patient. Thank you for coming back. Thank you for listening. We're going to jump right in. Apparently, HCDS, that's Hillary Clinton... What's the D stand
yes,
for?
B. Smith, 747, says, the Hillary Clinton derangement syndrome is still strong with this one. I see.
She's talking.
Come on, Scott. There are enough Democrats mounting campaigns for 2020 to round out a basketball team. Why not try to lampoon one of them? Hillary Clinton is so played out.
Basketball team? Heck, it could be a baseball team.
Cheapskate Zero says, at last, something R's and D's can agree on. Hillary is so played out.
Okay, here's the reason I keep mentioning this, because she keeps mentioning herself. She keeps injecting herself in this campaign. And I am convinced, I've said this for months and 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 months, that I'm convinced that she's running again. Now I'm going to change my view just a tad. I don't think she's going to run a campaign. I don't think she's going to run in the primaries now. I think she's hoping that, yes, there are a bazillion Democratic nominees, which is bad for the Democratic Party, quite frankly. It's bad for them this year in 2020 as it was for the Republicans in 2016. It's better to have 3-4 strong candidates versus 20 pretty much the same. They're not mediocre. They're just kind of all the same. So I think what she's hoping for is that, if I had to predict today, that there's no one's going to come into the convention with a majority of delegates, and she can swoop in and be the savior of the Democratic Party. But she still very much sees herself in play. I'm convinced of this. So I'll stop when she stops. That's that plain and simple.
Well, that's what Guy Gen 2004 said. It's not a done deal that Hillary won't run, and she's only said things that indicate she's keeping the option open. She should just put the issue to bed and declare herself out.
Or in. Hey, listen, in. Here's the thing. You know, historically in this country, and I've said this before, people who have lost, men, of course, who have lost in the Electoral College but won the popular vote, when they came back 4 years later, they won by a lot. So, you know, the fact that she won the popular vote by over 3 million votes tells you that's got to stick in your craw when you come that close. And especially losing to the likes of Donald Trump, you've got to think, I can win this. I should have won that one. And so, yeah, it's still going to be a thing. The fact is, with the rest of the Democratic candidates, there's so damn many of them, and none of them are standing out. They're all pretty much the same. And, you know, Bernie comes, and now Bernie is the front runner. If Bernie gets elected, he'll be the oldest president we've ever had by a lot. You know, they're talking about, and Biden now is talking about some of the rumblings. Did you hear this, Jenny?
No.
The rumblings is that Biden would run with Beto O'Rourke.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so which makes sense. You have an old guy and a real young guy.
Right, so you can kind of...
Yeah, the presumption is that the old guy will drop dead in office and the young guy will take over.
You're voting or they only stay one term and then the next one...
Whatever, but I mean, it's interesting. The fact is there's no standout candidates. There's not plural. They're all very much alike. And I ask my Democratic friends who they like, and it's kind of all over the place, but no one, and it's early, and everyone's saying, well, it's still sort of, the first debates in the Democratic primary are going to be in June.
I know, they're having the debates and stuff soon, but it's still early for a candidate to come out. I mean, just because you have a debate doesn't mean no one else can join, no one else can pop up.
Right, but it does start to settle the field in a way. It will certainly have some of the candidates, as their poll numbers are still mired in 1, 2, 3% land, will drop out. But it's still, it's too early. Why can't we go to the British system where, you know, just have a 4-week campaign, boom.
Would be easier.
It would be...
It would be cheaper. Spend so much money on the campaigns. It's crazy. That money could go to actually fix some of the problems that we...
Well, it won't, because that's not
what people... I know it won't, but it would be nice if it was.
That's sweet. That's so naive, though. It's crazy that the people who give money to political campaigns aren't going to turn around and say, well, now I'm going to give it to a school.
Yeah, because you could. You could fund entire schools.
You could, but they don't.
No.
What else?
So you also asked, Winslow asked Carmen if she was going to be supporting her party's nominee.
Yeah.
And Darson 54 says, Carmen will vote for Trump because that's what their party does, obey. Which, of course, she did not.
Yeah.
Last one.
No, in 2016, I have to remind you that she actually endorsed and supported and worked for Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, the Libertarian candidates for president and vice president in 2016.
Speaking of, Christopher Shea says, as a Democrat, I'll gladly answer the question. Hell yes. I'm not a fan of all the candidates currently running, but I can tell you right now, every one of them would be more competent and less corrupt than Trump. Unless the Republicans come to their senses and nominate Bill Weld. Spoiler, they won't.
No, they won't. And Bill Weld is he's a Massachusetts Republican, which means pretty rhino, and by even my standards. But we actually had Bill Weld. We're one of the only candidate we've ever had on this podcast was Gary Johnson and Bill Weld.
And you actually had said that maybe it would have been better if the ticket had been
flipped. I think
so.
I think Weld is seems more presidential than Gary did, than Governor Johnson did. And Governor Weld is talking about running for the Republican nomination. It doesn't have a prayer in hell, at all, in any way, shape, or form. But wouldn't it be nice to have a contested primary?
Yes.
And wouldn't it be nice for someone who's smart and agile and intellectually agile to take on the current incumbent? I think that'd be terrific. But, we'll see what happens. I suspect his numbers will never amount to anything, and Trump will successfully dodge debating someone like that. But, we'll see.
Okay.
What else we got?
Well, your Sunday, you kind of did it was kind of like crazy and stormy and topsy-turvy.
Yes.
And Z51 said, the calm and the quiet normally gets it shoved up theirs first because they are calm and quiet. The mouthy few control.
That's what's happened in the last decade. The loud, stupid people who scream and are the ones that we're paying attention to. It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. We don't listen to calm. We don't listen to patient. Here in Chicago, and I'm going to totally screw up, so Janine's going to have to help me. The name of the actor from Empire. Oh, her eyes just got really wide.
Jesse Smollett, maybe?
Jesse, okay. And that whole story, when it first came out, it didn't smell right to me. I didn't comment on it because... except on the Mincing Rascals podcast, another podcast I'm on. And I said, on these types of issues, I like to wait and see and let these things play out and see what they actually are, because the first day story is almost never right. And on that particular case, I was correct. So
you don't need to comment immediately on everything.
In this day and age, yes, you do. In this day and age, you have to, Janine. That's the thing. And that's I got to tell you, the newspaper I work for and all the other media outlets, they want to be out there first and have a comment and have columns and all this other stuff. And if you're wrong, you look like a moron. And what's happened is other columnists who came out and said, well, this is a horrible thing and indicative, and this is what MAGA stands for, blah, 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 which, of course, turned out not to be the case at all. And the people who wrote those things aren't backing down. They're doubling down. And that's the thing about the Trump era in America, is we double down on stupid. We'll say something completely inaccurate, completely wrong, and then
just keep going with it and hope that...
Yeah, you just keep saying it. And if you keep saying it, then maybe it'll be right, and then we go on to the next thing. And it's... terrible way to run a government. It's a terrible way to run your life. So, you mentioned that what led to this, my little hissy fit here, was that we're not patient, and we're just not. And I'm a cartoonist. I'm not known to be the most mature person in the room. However, there are times when I guess I am. You just have to wait. I'm going to dig, and I wanted to touch on the controversy now, unless we have other comments you wanted to...
Nope.
Okay. A comic strip recently done by David Wiley Miller called Non Sequitur. He snuck in, or had in it, it was a cartoon about, ostensibly about the drawings of Leonardo da Vinci, and in the cross-hatching, you can read, it says, F you Trump. This obviously got a lot of people noticing it, which is weird because first and foremost, when I saw it, I took you a long time, even when I pointed to it.
Right. I had no, I couldn't read it.
No.
So I wonder who looks at things that closely.
Well, I know.
Someone, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, people send stuff to me all the time. Say, I saw this in your drawing. I go, did you look? I got to tell you, you spent more time looking at it than I did. Anyway, but it clearly says F you, Trump. And I wanted to comment on this a little bit and then maybe hear from you as well. But non-sequitur has been a strip that's been around for 20 years, been very successful. People seem to really enjoy it. In polls, it does very, very well in readers' polls. I love the fact that David Wiley Miller, I've known David forever and long enough to, I call him David. That's why I have David. And he is a cartoonist. Here's why this is bad. And then I'm also going to say why there's no good guy in this scenario. So this comes out, it becomes a big splash. Bunches of papers are dropping non sequitur now because they feel it's a betrayal of trust. It's a betrayal. The editors are being very self-righteous. And so on. My first reaction is, editors, where the hell were you when this came across your desk? Because you never notice on things like this, the editor never isn't the one who ever gets screwed. The editor is not the one who ever gets fired, even though it's their damn fault and it's their job description. Editor is in their title and they don't do their jobs. And then something like this sneaks by. It shouldn't have been done, okay? But something sneaks by and these guys don't get fired or reprimanded or anything else. I mean, it's crazy. Ted Rall, who, you know, full disclosure here, is a very good friend of mine, got screwed over by the LA Times because they said he lied in his blog post. And I'm saying, and not one editor lost their job because of this. Now, where were the editors if they feel this is true? And by the way, it wasn't. And this thing is going to the California Supreme Court now. But if this was true and that there was lying, why didn't his editors catch this?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's the editor's fault. They're ultimately responsible for this, and they never take responsibility for this stuff. So, bad guy number one. Bad guy number two is David Wiley Miller. His reaction once it came to light that this was in the strip was that he had done it sort of as a joke and had every intention of removing it and forgot. Okay, well, there's a problem with that story in that he issued that on Monday. On the Sunday before that, he tweeted that there's an Easter egg in my cartoon today. See if you can find it. So you don't
basically
promote something.
Well,
and
maybe
then
that's why they actually looked at it that closely.
I can't speak for David. I really can't.
But also just because of one thing, you don't get rid of a 20-year comic strip, I would think.
No.
And now it's like you make one mistake or something that might be considered a mistake, and you're gone. You don't get a chance to.
No, you don't think an editor would get a second chance? You think a reporter who's maybe screwed up a quote or something wouldn't get a second chance? Of course they would. This zero tolerance is BS, quite frankly. But David's a bad guy in this story too, because he shouldn't. I mean, for 40 years I've been doing this job professionally, and I still have to fight the notion that I'm somehow a child, and that, you know, I keep having to tell my editors, for 40 years, I've never snuck a penis in my cartoons.
But they are looking to make sure that you don't.
Right.
And which is ridiculous.
Of course it is. Of course it is. And this just confirms their worst fears about cartoons.
Because they view you guys as just sort of like goofy jokesters who are going to do who knows what. You can't trust them. They're not serious.
We're not. Yeah, I think we're viewed as unserious.
Which is why whenever they have commentators, they don't generally have cartoonists. And when you have been on television, they wanted you sort of to perform,
yeah,
even though you could discuss the politics that were happening as well as any of the other commentators.
Well, I'd say better, but because we view things with a more jaundiced eye. And also, I think we're more clever than most commentators. But they would rather have a columnist for the Akron Beacon than they would have a cartoonist. And when they do have us on, Janine's absolutely right. They say, hey, you know, it's pretty much now for the lighter side of politics, here's Scott Stannis. And I'm just, if you've listened to this podcast, you know, I do think about these things and have an opinion and I can articulate it, I think, relatively well. So, this hurts the non sequitur controversy, hurts cartoonists, and it gives them another excuse to get rid of us. And frankly, I think that part of it is because we're probably the most populist of the expressions in modern media. They really dislike us because they're elitist. I mean, and they don't want us around. And they've been working their their tails off the last decade to get rid of us. There's fewer than 25 staff editorial cartoonists in the nation right now. Staff editorial cartooning meaning that's your main job and you get benefits and a salary. Less than 25 of us left. Comic strips are being cut down more and more. They look at the Sunday comic section, something that people actually enjoy, but editors have always resented that. And it's this has become kind of a squeed against editors. This whole podcast. No, there's some I'm sure, and some I'm sure are good. That was the worst Donald Trump imitation in the history.
Yes, it wasn't good, but you don't want to be good. You don't want to be good at doing him.
No. Anyway, so that's my take on the non sequitur. If I was an editor, I would expect an apology, which apparently David has issued, and then I would put him on double secret probation and just go forward and say, if you do it again, then you're gone. They're not doing that. They're just dropping him left and right, and it's crazy. It's because you can have this moral high ground, which is preposterous, and it applies to nobody else in the paper. So anyway, that's my take on that. And I think that's about it, right?
That's it.
All right. Well, hey, listen, thanks again for listening to the Prickly Sea podcast. We really do appreciate it. And your time, and thanks for listening. Janine, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you to Brian Altimer, our wonderful, wonderful producer. Gosh, he puts up with a lot of stuff, especially me pushing buttons. And
he's
thank you.
He's a hardworking guy.
He is, especially today. He's apparently people are out sick, so he's doing everything. He still took time to help us do this. So, a swell guy. Thank you, Brian. And thank you, WGN and WGN Plus, for letting us use your equipment and posting the podcast. And, if you want to keep up with the antics of Carmen Winslow, you can do so by going to...
Really?
You can.
How?
You just go to gocomics.com/PricklyCity.
That's easy, huh?
Guess how much it is.
$500?
Keep going.
$800?
No, it's free.
Free? I can't believe it.
It's free.
How can they do that for free?
Volume, volume, volume. It actually is a great site. You should go to gocomics.com/PricklyCity, and you can register for free and get all your favorite cartoons, even non sequitur, David is still producing, thankfully. And that's gocomics.com/PricklyCity. And leave a comment. Maybe we'll read it here on the podcast. Or you can contact us directly at, excuse me, I'm losing my voice because I'm getting verklempt, at PricklyCity@gmail.com. That's PricklyCity@gmail.com. One last time, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, we'll see you in the funny papers.